Let's open up to 2 Samuel chapter 13, verse 23, which I think takes place right around 992 BC, which would be 2 full years after the rape of Princess Tamar by Crown Prince Amnon, and about 4 years, by my estimation, after the adultery of King David with Bathsheba and the subsequent death of Uriah the Hittite. I believe that David's guilt over his own actions resulted in him not executing Crown Prince Amnon as he should have. The law would have been very clear on this matter, but then again, the law was pretty clear that David should have been tried and executed for what he did. So I believe this is one of the serious bits of fallout from David's affair and how it affects a lot of things in his kingdom thereafter. So the full brother of the rape victim, Tamar, is Absalom, the prince, son of a princess from up in Aram. And he waits for 2 years to bring justice in his mind to his half-brother. And this is the way that he does it. Verse 23 says, after 2 full years, Absalom had sheep shearers at Baal Hazor, which is near Ephraim. And Absalom invited all the king's sons. And Absalom came to the king and said, behold, your servant has sheep shearers. Please let the king and his servants go with your servant. But the king said to Absalom, no, my son, let us not all go, lest we be burdensome to you. He pressed him, but he would not go, but he gave him his blessing. And then Absalom said, well, if not, please let my brother Amnon go with us. And the king said to him, why should he go with you? But Absalom pressed him until he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. So I told you yesterday, I suspect that Absalom's plan also included the execution of David. That he believed David was complicit because he didn't do anything about the rape. But David chooses not to go. And even though David is suspicious of the invitation to Absalom's half-brother Amnon, that he knows these two shouldn't be getting along well, he goes ahead and lets them all go this distance to the north from the city of Jerusalem. And here is the instruction that Absalom gave covertly to his people. Verse 26. Verse 28. Then Absalom commanded his servants, mark when Amnon's heart is merry with wine. And when I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. Do not fear, have I not commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant. So Absalom knows that at the end of the day, there's always going to be a feast, and people are going to be drinking. Amnon will definitely be drinking. And at just the right moment, he's going to give a signal, and his men are supposed to jump on Amnon and kill him on the spot because he's a rapist that has not been punished yet. And he tells his men that they need to stick with this plan and do it because it's the right thing to do. And they do. Verse 29. So the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose and each mounted his mule and fled. They did not ride horses, which was according to the Jewish directives of the law. Instead, they rode mules. And so away these others went. ranging in age from somewhere right around their early 20s, slightly younger than Amnon and Absalom are. They're in about their mid-20s. Right down probably to maybe adolescence, or might even be some preteens among them. Now, verse 30, while they were on the way, news came to David. Absalom has struck down all the king's sons. Not one of them is left. Now, I don't know how this rumor got back to him so fast, but it did, and it's incorrect. So, verse 31, then the king arose, tore his garments, lay on the earth, and all his servants who were standing by tore their garments. But Jonadab, the son of Shimei, David's brother, do you remember this guy? He's the cousin that advised Amnon to pretend to be sick so that he could then express his love to his half-sister Tamar and maybe get into a relationship with her. And that attempt turned into a rape. And so apparently this cousin is now privy to Absalom's plans. So he passes on to David the full story. Jonadab said to David, let not my lord suppose that all have been killed by the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon alone is dead. For by the command of Absalom, this has been determined from the day he violated his sister Tamar. So that's how we find out this cousin seems to have been brought into Absalom's plan from the very beginning. Maybe he went along with it because he felt guilty because his advice had led to the rape in the first place. Verse 33. Now therefore, let not my lord the king so take it to heart as to suppose that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon alone is dead. But Absalom fled. So he understood the whole time, I think, that once he did this, he was going to be in trouble. Even though he felt that he was carrying out justice, executing a rapist that had gotten away with it, that he still would not be welcome back to the palace. So he's going to run away to his grandfather's kingdom up in the north. Geshur, which is part of Aram, or Syria. So Absalom fled, and the young men who kept the watch lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, many people were coming from the road behind him by the side of the mountain. And Jonadab said to the king, behold, the king's sons have come, as your servant said, so it's come about. And as soon as he finished speaking, behold, the king's sons came and lifted up their voice and wept, and the king also and all his servants wept very bitterly. So everybody's upset because they had this big scare that in their mind, it felt like Absalom was attempting a coup, that he's killing off all of the heirs so that he could become the only one left. And that's not what he was up to. Not this time around. That comes later. Now that they can see that only Amnon is dead, they grieve over the death of the crown prince, the presumed crown prince. But they're happy that all the other boys are still alive. Verse 37. But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, king of Geshur. And so that's his grandfather, his mom's dad. And David mourned for his son day after day. Now, the question is, which son is he mourning? And I don't think we can be absolutely certain from the grammar here. It's possible that he was mourning over Amnon, but we know for a fact, by the time we get to verse number 39, that he's also mourning over the fact that Absalom is gone. So I think it's possible it's a mixture, that it might have started out that David mourned over the stupidity of the situation, that his son Amnon would rape his daughter Tamar and then end up dead. And he might have grieved a little bit over the fact that he didn't step in and do something to have stopped either one of those incidents. He's carrying a lot of guilt. Let's be honest with that. Verse 38. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there for 3 years. So now we're right around 989 BC by my calculations. It's the 29th year of King David's reign, which means that he's about 59. Because remember, he was 30 when he became king. Verse 39. And the spirit of the king longed to go out to Absalom because he was comforted about Amnon since he was dead. So he's now worked it out in his heart that Amnon was the problem. Amnon is dead at the hands of Absalom. But he was a rapist, and death is the penalty for rape. And so Absalom really only followed through with what David should have made happen when the rape first occurred. And so now he's starting to feel that he wishes that Absalom were back. And it would appear at this point, based on the birth order, that Absalom is the next one up for the throne. Because remember, I told you that the second son that's mentioned, there's really nothing about him other than his name and who his mother is. That's Abigail. It almost appears as if he died early on. So let's see what happens next. Verse 1 of chapter 14 in 2 Samuel. Now, Joab, the son of Zeruiah, knew that the king's heart went out to Absalom. So Joab is David's nephew, but somewhere close to him in age. And he is the commander of the Israeli armies. And because of that, he has regular contact with David. And so he knows that David is grieving over Absalom being outside of the kingdom. So Joab comes up with a plan. And this plan takes advantage of the fact that David's job as king involves hearing judicial cases that have not been resolved by the lower courts. So verse number 2, Joab sent to Tekoa, and he brought from there a wise woman and said to her, "Pretend to be a mourner and put on mourning garments. Don't anoint yourself with oil, but behave like a woman who has been mourning many days for the dead. And go to the king and speak thus to him." And so Joab then put words in her mouth. So he goes and finds somebody that he knows he can trust to carry out his plan. And his plan is to put a case in front of David to judge that will cause him to bring Absalom back to the kingdom. And so here's how that plays out. Verse 4. When the woman of Tekoa came to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and paid homage and said, "Save me, O king." And the king said to her, "What is your trouble?" She answered, "Alas, I am a widow. My husband is dead. Your servant has 2 sons, and they quarreled with each other in the field, and there was no one to separate them, and one struck the other and killed him. And now the whole clan has risen up against your servant, and they say, give up the man who struck his brother, that we may put him to death for the life of his brother whom he killed. And so they would destroy the heir also, and thus they would quench my coal that is left, and leave to my husband neither name nor remnant on the face of the earth. So you can see the structure of this complaint that David is supposed to unravel and make a judgment about. A widow woman who has two sons, one of them ended up killing the other, and now the rest of the family and the neighbors want to execute him because he was involved in the death of the other. And that's going to leave her with nobody. And so she wants David to save her other son. Verse 8, then the king said to the woman, go to your house, and I will give orders concerning you. And the woman of Tekoa said to the king, on me be the guilt, my lord the king, and on my father's house. Let the king and his throne be guiltless. And the king said, if anyone says anything to you, bring him to me, and he shall never touch you again. And then she said, please, let the king invoke he who is your God, that the avenger of blood kill no more, and my son should not be destroyed. And he said, as he who is lives, not one hair of your son shall fall to the ground. So she insists that David give an oath in the name of God that her son will not be executed by the avenger of blood, the executioner for the death of her other son. And David gives that oath because it is important that the heir remain in place to take care of this lady in her old age and to even raise up children of his own to carry on the family name and to carry on the inheritance rights for the family farm. So that's why David goes with his judgment. Now, verse 12. Then the woman said, please let your servant speak a word to my lord the king. And he said, speak. And the woman said, why then have you planned such a thing against the people of God? For in giving this decision, the king convicts himself, inasmuch as the king does not bring his banished one home again. We must all die. We are like water spilled on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. But God will not take away life, and he devises means so that the banished one will not remain an outcast. Now I've come to say this to my lord the king, because the people have made me afraid, and your servant thought, I'll speak to the king. It may be that the king will perform the request of his servant, for the king will hear and deliver his servant from the hand of the man who would destroy me and my son together from the heritage of the Lord. And your servant thought, the word of my lord the king will set me at rest, for my lord the king is like the angel of God, or the messenger of God, to discern good and evil. He who is your God be with you. So she makes the application to David's situation. David, you have a son who killed your other son. And this son that remains is the heir. And you have kept him away from the country of Israel, away from your kingdom, because some people probably want to have him executed over the fact that he killed his brother. That's not right, David. You should be bringing Absalom back. So that's effectively what she tells David. You need to get your act together and do the right thing here. Verse 18. Then the king answered the woman, don't hide from me. Do not hide from me anything I ask you. The woman said, let my lord the king speak. And the king said, is the hand of Joab with you in all this? And the woman answered and said, "As surely as you live, my lord the king, one cannot turn to the right hand or to the left from anything that my lord the king has said. It was your servant Joab who commanded me. It was he who put all these words in the mouth of your servant in order to change the course of things. Your servant Joab did this. But my lord has wisdom like the wisdom of the angel or messenger of God to know all things that are on the earth." So he suspects instantly that Joab has something to do with this, which tells me that probably he and Joab have had conversations on this topic before. And Joab had said, "Look, David, you know that Amnon needed to be executed and you didn't do it. Absalom did, and then he ran away because he's afraid he's going to be executed for what he did. But what he did was the just thing. Why should he remain in exile?" But David had taken no such action to bring Absalom back. So he suspects Joab was in on this. Turns out he was right. But the woman keeps on reminding David, this is the right thing to do. Because as hard as it is to hear, the reality is Amnon raped his sister and deserved to be executed. Verse 21. "Then the king said to Joab, 'Behold now, I grant this. Go bring back the young man Absalom.' And Joab fell on his face to the ground and paid homage and blessed the king. And Joab said, 'Today your servant knows that I have found favor in your sight, my lord the king, in that the king has granted the request of his servant.' And so Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem." And so David grants, I suppose we would say, amnesty or protection for Absalom regarding the illicit way that he carried out the execution of his rapist half-brother, and allows him to come back to Israel. But David is not yet ready to act as if everything is fine. And so, verse number 24, "The king said, 'Let him dwell apart in his own house. He is not to come into my presence.' And so Absalom lived apart in his own house and did not come into the king's presence." So David feels that it would be inappropriate for him to act as if everything's fine, and to bring Absalom back to the court of the kingdom, and let him act as if he's going to be the next king, you know, the crown prince, because he is the oldest, apparently oldest surviving son of David. Now, what everybody is probably unaware of is that by now, David is already in his mind thinking that Solomon, his son by Bathsheba, is going to be the crown prince. He's going to be the king that follows on the throne of David. Now, he's only a little child. If I'm correct in my chronology, he's probably about about 5 or 6. So he's just now starting into his training with David as to what the future holds for him. So nobody else seems to be aware of that just yet. But David does not want to give Absalom the sense that everything is fine. Okay, here's where we'll set up for tomorrow, looking at verse 25. "Now in all Israel, there was no one so much to be praised for his handsome appearance as Absalom. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him." So he is a very handsome specimen of a man. And he is probably in his second half of his 20s. And he looks good. Verse 26, "And when he cut the hair of his head for at the end of every year, he used to cut it. When it was heavy on him, he cut it. He weighed the hair of his head 200 shekels by the king's weight. So he's got some sort of physical condition that causes rapid growth of hair. And we're aware of some of these conditions. It may be that he had hair on other parts of his body as well that grew quickly. But he's got a massive amount of hair that grows every single year. And then he cuts it. Now, why is that important? Because later, that will be a component of his death, is his very heavy head of hair. Verse number 27. There were born to Absalom three sons and one daughter, whose name was Tamar, and she was a beautiful woman. So he's got some boys, and he's got one little girl, and he names his little girl after his sister, who apparently is still living with him and may live with him for the rest of her life. So Absalom is back, but David is not allowing him to come into his presence. Verse 28, so Absalom lived two full years in Jerusalem without coming into the king's presence. So that brings us to 987 BC, I believe, which is the 31st year of King David's reign, which makes David about 61 years of age. And by now, little brother Solomon is closing in on his 9th or 10th birthday. And he is the one that David is focusing all his energy on. And we will talk more about him later. But tomorrow we'll come back and find out that Absalom's had enough. He realizes that he is the surviving eldest son. He, by all rights, should be the next king. And his father is ignoring him. And he needs to assert himself now before his father gets any older.